Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of Talk That Talk with Tweety and LJ. I'm LJ.
What's going on, people? It's Tweety. We back at it again another week. Good stories, good info. National championship game coming up Monday. Got baseball opening late season coming up week. A lot of stuff going on in the sports world this weekend.
A lot of stuff going on in sports. Another day, another dollar.
Right on.
We get right to it. So if you didn't see yesterday, I'm sure everybody knows by now. Even if you haven't seen, you probably got an update on your phone or came across it somewhere. But the men's NCAA tournament championship game is now set in stone. Villanova throttled Oklahoma by 40 points. I don't remember exactly off the top of my head, but they won by a pretty good margin. And North Carolina is out Syracuse. They get another double-digit victory, not anything that was overwhelming, any close or anything like that. So championship games tomorrow night, Monday, at 9:10 Eastern, 8:10 Central, whatever time it starts in the other time zones. But so right off the bat, my championship team that I've been touting the last few weeks and picked obviously did not make it to – Oklahoma, they lost. Championship game-wise of the actual championship, who do you have to win and why?
Well, I can stick with my original pick, which was North Carolina. Because I feel like one is that team. And for two, it seems like their senior leadership or their upperclassmen is going to actually do what people expect them to do. These Marcus Page is putting it on at the right time. Bryce Johnson kicking it up a notch at the right time, even though he's had a pretty dang good year. But the shooting, for whatever reason, which was their Achilles heel in the regular season, has come alive in the tournament. And, I picked them to win. They're on the road. It just ended Syracuse with overrun. I think Carolina playing the best basketball in the nation right now, and I think they're going to win the championship. But just like I did in my brackets, make it seem like I know a little bit about basketball.
I think this. I think that this men's championship game is going to be a game of contrasting styles. If you look at it, Villanova is more of a guard-dominated offense. If you follow them for, I think Jay Wright's been there for somewhere around 14, 15 years. But his whole tenure there, for the most part of it anyways, they've kind of run a similar offense. Teams look fairly similar. You know, they have two or three really good point guardish or smaller guards that can shoot the ball well. I think Kyle Lowry, he went to Villanova. They had Scotty Reynolds back then. And Randy Foy, who plays for the Oklahoma City Thunder. Guys, six foot, six two, in that range. They have a few of those guys, and then they usually will run one, maybe two post players, somewhere around 6'6 to 6'7 and above range. They'll usually run those two guys, that kind of group out there all at one time. And Villanova does a lot of their damage from the three-point line. I mean, if you've paid attention to their games, they have shot an incredible field goal percentage, especially from behind the three-point line. They shot it really well yesterday evening against Oklahoma. And so they're more of a guard-dominated, they don't pound the ball inside a lot.
Right.
Whereas the reverse side of the coin, you have North Carolina. They do have some some good guards. Marcus Page, who was a McDonald's All-American, been around. He's a senior. The other guard, I believe his name is Drew Barry II. But they're more of a traditional team where they have big men. They can shoot the ball from the outside. The best player is probably Bryce Johnson, who's an inside player. But they like to get the ball inside, and they'll also shoot the ball from the outside well. But it's more of an inside-dominated team. You know, if their game is – if they're beating you, if they're playing to their strength, they're going to go inside to Bryce Johnson and Kennedy Meeks and stuff like that against most teams. And so that'll be – you know, it'll be a game of contrast of styles, really, if you will. North Carolina's probably going to want to slow the ball down just a little bit longer. Yeah, and they're going to want to get the ball inside and bang a little bit more, whereas you're going to probably see Villanova want to get up and down the court a little bit more, shoot the ball from deep. Villanova will at times run a little bit of some sort of variation of a pressure defense, three-quarter court traps and whatnot. So it'll be an interesting game. I think whoever shoots the ball, whoever shoots the ball the best from behind the three-point line is going to win this game. One, because Villanova is really dependent on a three-point line to win. And two, because on the North Carolina side, because North Carolina can be a little bit streaky when it comes to shooting behind the three-point line. So I think that if there's a huge discrepancy in favor of Villanova, I think Villanova will win. But if it's close, or North Carolina had the edge, I think North Carolina will have the edge. I think North Carolina will win. But just in general, me picking, I think North Carolina will probably end up pulling it out. Even though, you know, Villanova, like I said, they have shot the ball great as of this in this tournament, and history says that at some point they're gonna return back to their average. Law of averages is gonna fall in there, and they're gonna kind of get back in line where they normally shoot the ball, which will, I think, is going to have them fall on the wrong side of the score come tomorrow evening. But that's enough of the NCAA. I mean, that's the men's side of the NCAA tournament. The women's side of the NCAA tournament, honestly, got to be honest, nobody cares. I don't mean that in a disrespectful. I'm saying that facetiously. Yeah, I'm saying that facetiously to try to facilitate the discussion on the topic that we mentioned on our show a few weeks ago, and it's come up really a lot over the past five to 7 days, is does anybody care about the NCAA tournament on the women's side? It's not really does anybody care. It's more of is the dominance of the University of Connecticut. Well, I don't even say it's worth watching. Is that because the discussion has been is the dominance of the UConn women's basketball team hurting the game of hurting women's college basketball? What are your thoughts? Do you think that UConn's women team being so dominant is hurting women's college basketball? They won 73 games in a row. I believe they won 9 out of the last 10 national championships, something along that line. I don't know the exact number, but I think that's right. What are your thoughts?
I would say it's good. Hurting the game is kind of a stretch, but I will say it's kind of boring when you know the outcome already. And right now, you know UConn is going to win, and not the fact that they win. They're beating the supposed second-best team in the nation by almost 50 points. If this team is supposed to be number two, and UConn is number one, and they beat them by 50, it's kind of hard to draw interest in that because nobody wants to see a blowout. Even on the men's side, nobody wants to see a blowout, period. And like in the midst of this 73-game winning streak UConn got, I think nobody has come within 10 points of them, and that's complete domination. And I'm not gonna say it's bad for the game, but for a game that hardly any of America watches already, to already know the outcome and not even have an interest of somebody may even come close to beating them, I guess you could say that it's taken away from the game, but I'm not going to say it's hurting the game because they the only thing that they're in to talk about in women's college basketball. And who to say that if it was more parity, that necessarily means more interest. The fact that you have UConn dominating might actually give somebody something to talk about in women's basketball. So I guess you could say it's good for a storyline, but if you want multiple storylines, and now, because it's right now about UConn at the moment. Because Tennessee didn't even dominate like this.
I don't think that. I would say that excellence, under normal circumstances, excellence in a sport does not hurt the sport.
Right.
I think that's under normal circumstances. I think the problem that Connecticut has, and the reason that you can make the argument that their excellence is hurting the sport, and it's not necessarily their excellence. It's basically along the lines of what you said. It's the way that they're beating teams. If you to kind of draw some similarities to this, is Floyd Mayweather. I know he's retired now,
mm-hmm.
but if you started to look later on in Floyd Mayweather's career, people started to question whether or not they should continue to pay for Floyd Mayweather's fights because they were becoming boring. And, I mean, he's more of a defensive puncher. He doesn't knock people out, et cetera, et cetera. So stylistically, maybe that played a part in it. But the biggest reason why is because he was beating people so handedly. You know, he was taking the best there was to offer, or, you know, his opponents were world-class, top-of-the-line fighters, and he was beating them so easily that it became more along the lines of, well, you know, why am I going to continue to pay to watch Floyd Mayweather fight when he's just, you know, the guy who his opponent just doesn't even have a shot. And I think that's what is causing the friction here with women's basketball is that, like you said, Kentucky is dominating everybody so badly that the games that they play in are that much less compelling. I mean, if you think about it, in men's basketball, during the regular season, if there's a number one versus a number two seed, people are going to want to tune in. I'm going to say myself want to tune in. You know, there may be a game that I'm going to sit down and watch. But in women's basketball, I don't want to watch that game because I don't want to watch Connecticut beat the number two team by 40 points. So if Connecticut consistently beats the second-ranked team by 30, 40 points, then there's no interest for me, and I think that you can – draw this conclusion maybe across a larger audience, there's no interest in watching Connecticut play there's no interest in watching them playing a number five ranked team or so on and so forth. And if the likelihood of other teams winning is decreased so drastically because the number one team is so dominant, I think that overall it will decrease the interest in the sport. Another analogy you can draw, what I guess is probably not the right word, but comparison of a similar situation, if you will, University of Alabama. I think since the BCS has been in place, I want to say Alabama has won 5 of the 7 national championships. So along that line, extremely dominant, extremely dominant. I mean, you can make it, you know, you go into the season every year thinking, well, you know, national championship, I mean, excuse me, not national championship. When it comes to the BCS and the college football national championship, you assume that at some point, no matter where Alabama is ranked at the beginning of the season, that they're going to be in talks at the end of the season to win a championship, especially now that they have the playoff system. But the reason that Alabama and college football can remain compelling is that if Alabama plays against a number two team, generally speaking, even over that 7-year period, it's not that Alabama is beating every team by 40 points. Or, you know, if it's a top 10 team or top 5 team, they may have some games where they blew them out or they beat them convincingly, but Alabama has lost over that time span. They have had years where they didn't win a national championship, and they have had games where they have been beaten, or the games, even if they have won those games, the games have been compelling, interesting. You know, we go back to the game where they lost on the last play against Auburn a few years back. Only I think it was the missed field goal. You know, we go back to when
Johnny Manziel,
some of the great games that Johnny Manziel had against Alabama. And, you know, I believe it was the last, I can't remember if it was last year or the year before where they lost to the Ole Miss team. I think it was last year. They lost to Ole Miss. But Alabama has lost, some of the games they played have been really good. Whereas for the, you can't probably say the same for the UConn team across the board like that. And I think that does not help. And I think that's where their dominance, I should say, comes into play and has a negative impact on the interest that is generated for women's college basketball. And another factor that contributes to that is that, I mean, if we're being honest, and it doesn't matter whether you like women's college basketball or not, aesthetically, women's college basketball is just not very entertaining. There's no way around it. You know, it doesn't matter, in my opinion, it doesn't matter how you feel or how you look at it. Women's college basketball is not a very entertaining sport. I mean, you know.
What did they do when they talked about doing it, and I guess what they started in college basketball, WNBA, that's what the subject got brought up anyway, as far as lowering the goal. Like, do you think that adds to the entertainment? Do you think it has the possibility to add to the entertainment? No, I don't think it'll add to the excitement of it, because I don't think the lack of excitement
in women's basketball is simply about the fact that they cannot dunk. I mean, I mean, would that help? Yeah, maybe. Sure, you can make an argument that having a dunk here at two in there would excite. I mean, when Brittany Griner played for Baylor, I was no more interested in watching women's college basketball than I am now. You know, there's nothing exciting about watching Brittany Griner dunk because she's a female. That doesn't matter. I don't particularly care. I mean, when, you know, it's just like if you see, if you see somebody in the NBA barely dunk, there's nothing exciting about that. Brittany Griner is 6'8". There's nothing exciting about saying somebody who's 6'8" can barely dunk a basketball. Doesn't matter that she's a female. She's still 6'8". I mean, you know, at the end of the day, that's how I view it. So I don't think dunking is a solution to their problems. I think lowering the goal is a solution to their problems. I think they just the game has got to be, they just got to find a way to make the game more exciting, more compelling. I mean, one of the reasons why I like to watch Oklahoma this past season because it is very exciting to know that Buddy Hill might score 37 points. You know. Yeah, I mean, it's exciting. It's exciting to turn on those games and watch the big-name stars in college basketball have great games, make great shots. And I don't think that women's basketball usually, not every year, they don't have this problem every year. They've had some big-time stars. I thought Elena Delladonna was amazing in college. She averaged over 30 points a game. I used to like to watch Maya Moore when she was in college. Beautiful jump shot. Yeah. I mean, a jump shot is amazing. But beyond that, I mean, there's nothing that, you know. Who was that?
Skylar Diggins, Angel McCautry. It had a few people back in the
gap. Skylar Diggins was good. I think Skylar Diggins is a little bit, I won't say she was overrated. She was really good, though. I won't take anything away from her, though. But, yeah, I think lowering the goal would be ridiculous. You know, it's women's basketball, because the game is so fundamentally sound, and it's almost very robotic. You know, it's almost like if you went to practice right now and said, all right, I want to make four passes. I want you to cut here. I want a sloppy screen over here. You and the pick and roll, and you come off, we're going to pass it here, and you're going to shoot the three. To me, that's what women's basketball is. It's very structured, very
it's fundamental,
you know,
basketball.
Connect the dot-ish. One to two to three to four. And there's nothing wrong with that, but aesthetically,
right?
You know, it doesn't make for a beautiful game when you don't have those individuals that, you know. I know it's a team game, and I think women's basketball is an outstanding and amazing representation of basketball, or just any sport actually being a team game, because they definitely play team basketball. But I mean, if we're being honest with ourselves, even though it's a team game, people like to tune into games to watch individuals. That's why when you watch SportsCenter and these different highlight shows or these different TV shows or the advertisement for games or whatever, they'll put a team name, but they will also put individual players. They will market individual players. Watch Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors. Watch so-and-so. You know, they will mention individual players' names. And I don't think women's basketball has that kind of star power and that kind of individual ability on a that transcends the sport on a year-to-year basis. I mean, Breonna Stewart is a great player. She's an amazing basketball player. She plays for the University of Connecticut. But, I mean, you know, she's not transcending women's basketball. No disrespect. She's an amazing basketball player. But Lauren Goles is not going to help. Lauren Goles won't do anything. But let's get to this the elephant in the room, literally, figuratively. Oh, D'Angelo Russell. Let's move on to the professional level.
Yeah.
To the professional level. I mean, you know, D'Angelo Russell is, and even D'Angelo Russell and Nick Young are both examples of the difference between women's basketball and men's college basketball. Now, outside of Breonna Stewart, I cannot name another women's basketball player in college basketball.
Okay.
Not one. Don't know not one of them name. And, you know, Breonna Stewart, McDonald's All-American, they won national championship every year she's been in college. This is her last year. I believe they haven't lost since she's been in college. Now, Ohio State did not win a national championship when D'Angelo Russell was there. Heard of him when he was in college. Nick Young played at USC. I didn't even know if USC – I couldn't even tell if USC was any good in basketball this year. But when Nick Young was there, I was paying attention to them. You know, that's an example of kind of stuff I'm talking about. Like when you say one of the problems I think that women's basketball is having as far as people not watching. But if you haven't heard, Nick Young and D'Angelo Russell, both of these guys are really good friends. I guess, from what I gathered.
We were going to talk about the D'Angelo Russell situation. Just going to talk about how the NBA world is reacting to D'Angelo Russell as far as labeling him a snitch and backstabbing, how they did this to him, had a few old school, you know, basketball players in there. They were at altercations with D'Angelo Russell. But I guess my personal take on it would be we probably wouldn't be as cool as we once were. I know I couldn't tell them nothing, but I would have to get by because at the end of the day, we got to make money together. I didn't got to hang out with them to make money with them. But I wouldn't have a physical altercation because he, I guess you could say, outed me. But I guess you could say it's always two sides of history. Nick Young wasn't doing wrong. Nick Young wouldn't not had nothing to get busted on. But I've never come up in an area or an era where we play pranks on people like that, and secretly recording people and putting it on the internet. That's just too much. It went too far. Came back to bite him in his butt. And right now he's trying to deal with, I guess, what's similar to what Kobe had to deal with. But he kind of told investigators that Shaq would pay women for sex. And, of course, at the time, Shaq was married to Sean. So, as you say, Kobe became Big Brother, gave him a little advice. But at the end of the day, D'Angelo Russell's not Kobe. So, the only way Kobe was able to overcome that was by playing excellent on the basketball court, going out and winning championships. I'm not sure if D'Angelo Russell can do that. For one, because he's very, very early in his career. He's not establishing any circle except for maybe the Lakers locker room, which he is now being shunned in now. It's going to be kind of hard for the young fella to make a recovery. So it's, I don't know what's going to be when it happens, but D'Angelo Russell, hopefully he get his head straight and get his head back to the game. And quite honestly, it was weird that the Lakers won that the game following the whole controversy when they won a close overtime game. But it's like we're running out of time. We're going to do it for the show. Hopefully, LJ will be back with us next week. So, once again, I appreciate y'all listening. Talk that talk. Tune in, LJ. Have a good week.
I'm not sure what happened. I think Tweety might have